In a world where stories shape our understanding of reality, A.S. Byatt's The Djinn in the Nightingale's Eye stands as a masterful tapestry of tales within tales. This collection has earned Byatt a reputation as one of Britain's most sophisticated literary voices, with critics praising her ability to weave intellectual depth with captivating storytelling. The book gained renewed attention when Emma Thompson described it as the book that changed my life in a 2018 interview, citing its exploration of female agency as transformative to her understanding of gender in storytelling. The collection's blend of academic insight and magical realism has made it required reading in university courses on contemporary literature and feminist theory, with the title story winning the prestigious Penn Malamud Award. What makes these stories so compelling is how they dance between ancient folklore and modern consciousness, asking us, what happens when the magical intrudes upon our rational world? Deep in a forest where sunlight barely penetrates the thick canopy, a little tailor, not a prince, not a warrior, but a simple craftsman, embarks on a journey that challenges the very structure of fairy tales. Unlike traditional heroes, this protagonist possesses no special powers or noble lineage, only his optimism, skilled hands, and a keen eye developed through years of detailed needlework. When offered three gifts by a mysterious gray man, he chooses a glass key, not out of greed, but simple curiosity, a choice that reflects his craftsman's appreciation for delicate objects and precise tools. This decision, seemingly insignificant, leads him to a sleeping beauty trapped in a glass coffin deep within the earth. The moment when the coffin shatters into tinkling fragments represents more than just physical liberation. It's the breaking of traditional narrative expectations. The sound itself echoes through the underground chamber like breaking chains, symbolizing the shattering of conventional fairy tale constraints. The awakened woman's first words reveal these deeply ingrained expectations. Are you the prince who has come to break my enchantment? Her visible disappointment upon learning he is merely a tailor speaks volumes about the roles we assign in our stories and the societal hierarchies they reinforce. Yet the tailor's humble response, identifying himself without pretense or apology, establishes him as a different kind of hero, one whose strength lies in his authenticity rather than his status. What follows is a tale of genuine heroism without the trappings of predetermined destiny or prophetic intervention. When the tailor confronts and ultimately slays the black magician with a shard of glass from the coffin, he does so not because prophecy demands it, but because circumstances require courage and quick thinking. He uses what he knows best, the precise handling of small, sharp objects, to overcome a powerful adversary. Most telling is the moment after the victory when he offers the lady complete freedom from any obligation to him, a radical departure from fairy tale tradition where the rescued princess automatically becomes the hero's prize. This gesture reveals a modern sensibility and choice in relationships. Their eventual happiness together comes not from fulfilling archetypal roles, but from mutual choice and genuine compatibility. The tailor continues his craft for pleasure rather than necessity, suggesting that true fulfillment comes not from transcending one's station, but from finding joy in one's authentic self and chosen work. His workshop becomes part of the castle, symbolizing how his identity as a craftsman remains central to who he is, even in his new life. Through this seemingly simple tale, Byatt invites us to question whether our stories might be richer if they celebrated ordinary courage rather than extraordinary birthright, and if true nobility might be found not in titles but in actions and choices. The story suggests that perhaps the most magical transformations occur not when we change who we are, but when we fully embrace our authentic selves. Set in a seaside village, Goad's story explores the complex relationship between personal decisions and their lasting impact. The narrative begins with a charismatic young sailor whose natural charm catches the attention of a miller's confident daughter. Their connection is symbolized by a silk ribbon, a simple gift that carries deeper meaning when he requests her patience until his return. The story takes a significant turn as the Miller's daughter experiences a profound personal crisis. Her transformation is noted through subtle changes. Her former radiance diminishes as she faces mounting difficulties. A troubling discovery in the barn creates tension throughout the village, while her apparent indifference only deepens the community's concerns. When the sailor returns, he finds her altered, speaking of phantom sounds that only she perceives, suggesting a mind struggling with profound emotional burden. A pivotal scene unfolds as the Miller's daughter, dressed in white, pursues what she believes to be an ethereal presence through the village streets toward the cliffs. This sequence represents both physical and psychological pursuit, leading to tragic consequences. The supernatural element manifests as a form of justice that eventually affects the sailor as well, despite his subsequent marriage to another woman. His final words about impatience suggest that time cannot erase the weight of past decisions. The story's power lies in its subtle approach to accountability. Rather than explicit judgment, it demonstrates how actions create ripples that touch even uninvolved parties, such as Jean, the sailor's wife, whose six children show an aversion to dancing. The recurring motif of dance serves as a metaphor for how past actions continue to influence our present, demanding recognition whether we acknowledge them or not. In our contemporary world of quick solutions, Goad's story offers a timeless reminder that certain consequences must be faced. In a kingdom where the sky has mysteriously transformed from blue to various shades of green, three princesses face a familiar fairy tale setup. The eldest, pale and quiet, volunteers for a quest to find a silver bird in the Old Man of the Mountain's garden. As she travels along the road beside the forest, she experiences a profound moment of narrative awareness. She realizes she is trapped in a story pattern where the eldest siblings always fail. This meta-awareness represents Byatt's brilliant subversion of fairy tale conventions. The princess doesn't simply participate in her story, she recognizes its structure and refuses to be constrained by it. When she sits down in despair, crushing a scorpion beneath her stone seat, she creates an opportunity to step outside her predetermined path. The scorpion's mention of a wise woman living across the forest offers an alternative to the main road, both literally and narratively. The old woman who lives where we collect stories and spin stories and mend what we can represents the possibility of narrative agency. Her challenge to the princess, "Why should things be as they always were?" speaks directly to readers about questioning inherited stories and expectations. The green sky that alarmed the kingdom becomes reframed not as a problem to solve, but as a beautiful variation worth appreciating. Through the brief tales of the other princesses, Byatt offers multiple paths of resistance to narrative destiny. The second princess completes the quest but transforms it, while the third princess chooses a gossamer thread that leads her out of the orchard into the woods, beginning an entirely new story. The enigmatic comment about there always being an old woman ahead of you on a journey and always one behind you too, not always the same, suggests the continuity of female wisdom across generations. Women helping other women escape limiting narratives. As the story closes with the sun streaking the apple-green horizon with grassy golden light, we're left with the sense that true heroism might lie not in completing quests, but in questioning why they exist and choosing our own paths through the forest of stories we inherit. In a mountain valley village plagued by the dullness of routine, siblings Harry, Jack, and Eva find themselves confronting the unimaginable when six massive, worm-like creatures descend from the mountains. These dragons, if that's what they are, don't breathe fire, but instead spew foul-smelling ash that destroys everything in their path. The villagers' response to this catastrophe reveals profound truths about human nature and our relationship with the extraordinary. What makes this tale particularly affecting is the strange juxtaposition of terror with ennui. Before the dragons arrive, the siblings suffer from profound boredom with their repetitive lives. The monsters bring destruction, but also a strange awakening, a reminder that comfort and predictability come at the cost of dulled senses. As they watch their village being consumed, the villagers experience a mixture of terror and strange ennui, suggesting that even in catastrophe, humans seek patterns and meaning. Harry's disappearance while attempting to rescue his pig Boris creates a wound in the narrative that never fully heals. His absence becomes part of the village's collective story, transformed into tales of bravery that acknowledge both his courage and their diminishing hope for his return. Meanwhile, the mysterious survival of both Eva's loom and Boris the pig, albeit with charred skin, suggests that some elements of life persist even through devastation. The most profound transformation occurs in Eva's perception. After the catastrophe, she sees her weaving with new eyes, appreciating colors and craftsmanship with an archaeologist's wonder. Disaster has granted her the perspective of distance, allowing her to see her everyday work as an artifact worthy of admiration. The villagers likewise transform their trauma into charms against boredom for future generations, creating narratives that acknowledge the true relations between peace and beauty and terror. This story speaks powerfully to how communities process trauma through storytelling. The dragons, never explained, never rationalized, represent the incomprehensible disasters that periodically interrupt human life. What matters isn't explaining these calamities, but how we incorporate them into our understanding of existence. The villagers' tales become both memorial and warning, preserving what was lost while acknowledging that peace exists only in relation to its absence. In the collection's title story, we meet Gillian Perholt, a narratologist whose professional life revolves around analyzing stories while her personal life undergoes unexpected transformation. After her husband leaves her for a younger woman, sending his farewell by fax, Gillian experiences not grief, but liberation, like a prisoner bursting chains, like a bird confined in a box, suddenly released. Her terse response, "Okay, agreed, clothes and bales in store, books in chests, ditto, we'll change locks, have a good time, G," reveals a woman embracing her newfound independence. Gillian's academic specialty, analyzing stories about women's lives, mirrors her own journey of self-discovery. At a conference in Ankara called Stories of Women's Lives, she presents on Chaucer's Patient Griselda, a tale of extreme female submission to male authority. The story's peculiar horror lies in how Walter assumes too many narrative positions, hero, villain, destiny, god, and narrator, leaving Griselda no space for agency. This analysis reflects Gillian's own emerging awareness of how women's stories have been constrained by male-dominated narratives. The conference setting in Turkey, where East meets West, where ancient myths coexist with modern life, provides the perfect backdrop for Gillian's encounter with the magical. Her visits to museums and historical sites bring her face to face with powerful female figures from the past, the earth goddess figurines, the many-breasted Artemis of Ephesus, and even her contemplation of the aging Virgin Mary as a bereaved old woman with shriveled womb and empty eyes. These encounters prepare her for the story's central magical event, the release of a djinn from an antique glass bottle. The djinn's emergence transforms Gillian's life in unexpected ways. Beyond granting her wishes, restoring her body to its 35-year-old state, and enabling her academic success, he introduces her to a different way of experiencing reality. Their relationship becomes an exploration of desire, power, and the tension between permanence and change. When Gillian uses her final wish not for herself, but to grant the djinn his freedom, "I wish you could have whatever you wish for," she demonstrates how true liberation comes from releasing rather than possessing. The story's conclusion, with the djinn occasionally returning to Gillian's life, suggests that magic doesn't need to be permanent to be meaningful. His parting gift, a glass paperweight called the Dance of the Elements, containing ribbons of colored glass, like rushing seed, full of forever possibilities, symbolizes how moments of enchantment remain suspended in our ordinary lives, visible if we know how to look. When Jillian notices a new age spot on her hand, despite her magically youthful appearance, we're reminded that even magic cannot permanently halt time's passage. Jillian's analysis of Chaucer's Clerk's Tale reveals the disturbing power dynamics embedded in traditional narratives about women. The story of patient Griselda, who submits to having her children taken away and being cast aside for a younger bride, all to prove her obedience to her husband, represents the extreme of female submission. What makes this tale particularly horrifying is not just Walter's cruelty, but how he controls every aspect of the narrative, leaving Griselda no space for her own story. The moment when Griselda strangles her maternal feelings represents what Jillian calls willed oblivion, a psychological state where women suppress their own desires and needs to conform to male expectations. This pattern of stopped energies appears across women's literature, reflecting how traditional narratives have constrained female agency. When Jillian freezes during her presentation, seeing an apparition no one else perceives, she physically embodies this narrative paralysis. Bayat contrasts Griselda's tale with Scheherazade from The Thousand and One Nights, who uses storytelling itself as a survival strategy. Unlike Griselda, who can only submit, Scheherazade creates space within patriarchal constraints through an endless beginning and delaying and ending of tales. Her narrative art becomes a form of power, allowing her to survive until her life becomes love and happy ever after. The frame story of The Thousand and One Nights, with its vengeful kings and the woman who has deceived a djinn with 98 lovers despite her imprisonment, further explores the complex power dynamics between men and women. The king's disgust at female sexuality leads to violence, while women use deception and narrative to create space for their desires. This tension between male control and female resistance runs throughout Bayat's collection. Through these nested stories, Bayat invites us to consider how the narratives we inherit shape our understanding of gender roles in power. Jillian's professional analysis of these tales parallels her personal journey toward greater agency, suggesting that recognizing the patterns in stories is the first step toward writing new ones for ourselves. Throughout her journey in Turkey, Jillian encounters powerful female divinities that contrast sharply with contemporary women's experiences. In the Museum of Anatolian Civilizations, she views ancient clay figurines of fat women, representations of the earth goddess fashioned by human fingers, so old you can't really imagine. These figures evolve from simple forms to the powerful goddess in the lion throne, with a child's head emerging between her legs, symbolizing female creative power. At Ephesus, Jillian stands before two statues of Artemis, once worshipped in one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. The colossal Artemis wears a temple crown and is decorated with rows of pendant breasts, symbols of fecundity that Jillian finds frightening, like Medusa's snakes, too much, but an orderly too much. This goddess predates the Greek Artemis, being an Asian earth goddess whose temple was served by both virgins and prostitutes, with male priests who castrated themselves in devotion. These encounters with ancient female divinity prompt Jillian to reconsider conventional religious narratives. When visiting Hagia Sophia, she reflects on how St. Paul preached against gods made with hands, angering the silversmiths who made shrines for Artemis. For 2 hours, the enraged citizens filled the theater shouting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," until Paul was forced to leave. A moment that captures the tension between emerging patriarchal religions and older goddess traditions. Even the Virgin Mary appears to Jillian not as the idealized mother, but as a bereaved old woman with shriveled womb and empty eyes who had watched her son's slow death. This vision connects Mary to the more ancient goddesses, suggesting continuity between pre-Christian female divinity and Christian iconography. These encounters with female divinity prepare Jillian for her meeting with the Djinn, a being from a tradition where female power was acknowledged but often feared. When she realizes the goddess, whether real or not, possesses a power and permanence that will outlast all of them, more alive, more energetic, infinitely more powerful than Jillian herself, she opens herself to experiencing magic beyond rational explanation. Through these reflections on female divinity across cultures and time periods, Byatt suggests that contemporary women might find empowerment by reconnecting with these ancient images of female power, not as literal beliefs, but as symbolic resources for reimagining women's potential beyond patriarchal constraints. At the heart of the Djinn in the Nightingale's Eye lies an exploration of wishes, what we desire, how we articulate those desires, and whether getting what we want brings true fulfillment. When the Djinn emerges from the Nightingale's Eye bottle, he offers Gillian the traditional three wishes, but with limitations. She cannot wish for eternal life or unlimited wishes. These constraints force her to consider carefully what she truly wants. Gillian's first wish, to have her body restored to when she last liked it, reflects a common human desire to reclaim youth. Yet, unlike many wish tales where youth brings beauty but not wisdom, Gillian remains herself, merely housed in her 35-year-old body with healthy, firm flesh, unfaded hair, and more secure teeth. She keeps her appendix scar and childhood knee mark, physical reminders of her history and identity. The Djinn's own tale of imprisonment reveals the dangers of wishes made in anger or fear. His beloved Zephyr, during an argument, impulsively wished to forget she had ever seen him, instantly trapping him in the bottle with the sealing spells he had taught her for pleasure games of power. This cautionary element appears again in Gillian's conference paper about the fishermen and the apes, where each wish causes the gleaming ape to shrink until he would become invisible. What distinguishes Gillian's approach to wishes is her growing understanding that freedom, for herself and others, matters more than personal gain. Her final wish, "I wish you could have whatever you wish for," represents a profound shift from self-interest to generosity. Rather than disappearing as in traditional tales, the Nightingale's Eye bottle dissolves into tiny blue glass marbles, and the Djinn remains free to come and go in her life. This transformation of the wishtail pattern reflects Byatt's broader interest in how we might reimagine traditional narratives. The glass paperweight the Djinn gives Gillian, containing ribbons of colored glass like rushing seed, full of forever possibilities, symbolizes how desire itself can be preserved like a moment suspended in glass, neither fulfilled nor extinguished, but held in beautiful potential. When Gillian notices a new age spot on her hand, despite her magically youthful appearance, we're reminded that even magic cannot halt time completely. The Djinn's answer to whether he'll stay, "No, but I shall probably return again," and Gillian's reminder, "If you remember to return in my lifetime," acknowledge the temporary nature of all encounters. True wisdom lies not in trying to make pleasure permanent, but in appreciating its presence when it arrives. Byatt's collection celebrates the recursive nature of storytelling, how tales contain other tales, how narrators become characters and characters become narrators, how stories we tell shape the stories we live. As a narratologist, Gillian Perholt professionally analyzes these patterns, yet finds herself living within them as her academic work on fairy tales and myths intersects with her magical encounter with the Djinn. The nested structure appears throughout the collection. The glass coffin presents a traditional fairy tale subverted through its humble protagonist. Goad's story frames a tragic tale of consequences within village gossip. The story of the eldest princess explicitly acknowledges fairy tale conventions while breaking them. Dragon's Breath shows how communities transform trauma into narrative. The title story contains multiple embedded tales, from Chaucer's Griselda to the 1001 Nights to the Fisherman and the Apes. This recursive quality reflects how humans use stories to make sense of experience. When Jillian watches tennis on television, she appreciates its perfect storytelling structure, how its scoring system creates maximum tension and pleasure. She prefers live matches to recorded ones for their wonderful open-endedness, their stories still in progress toward uncertain endings, a preference that mirrors her own journey from predetermined narratives toward open possibility. The transformation of the Nightingale's eye bottle into tiny blue glass marbles symbolizes how stories themselves can be broken apart and reconfigured. The glass paperweights that Jin gives Jillian, one containing a snake, another a flower suspended in glass, represent moments of beauty and danger captured but not controlled, visible from multiple angles depending on how we hold them to the light. When Jillian walks out onto Madison Avenue feeling happy, having regained access to the magical world she knew as a child, she embodies the collection's central insight, that stories are not merely entertainment, but portals between worlds, between past and present, between reality and possibility, between isolation and connection. The Jin's simple answer about whether he'll return, "If I do," leaves the story open-ended, inviting readers to consider which stories in their own lives might still be unfolding, which bottles might contain unexpected magic if only we knew how to look.